deep into the design, the operation of these space vehicles. We went in our training program. We trained 15 months for each of the missions that we would train for. Before that, we learned a great deal about how the rockets and spacecraft were built. And maybe more importantly, we became familiar with the vast numbers of young engineers and skilled workers who were putting all this together and actually making it possible for a few astronauts to go to the moon. They held the spear. We just happened to be at the tip and most visible. And when you have that kind of exposure, for me at least, the concern about returning disappeared. It probably have greater concern about getting back home to Albuquerque than I did about actually getting to the moon and returning safely. The program was very conservative in design and operations. There were always backup ways of getting things done. If a primary system failed, it was either backed up by what we call a redundant system, which would be an identical system, or by an alternative means of getting that job done. And I think most of the astronauts, all the astronauts, had a great deal of confidence. It doesn't mean things can't go wrong, as Apollo 13 showed, but on the other hand, it showed that you can recover from those kind of situations, even ones that are as dire as that one happened to be. My feelings, once we were down on the surface of the moon and had a chance to get outside, were really feelings at two levels, emotionally, I think. One, I really was trying to record in my mind as much as I possibly could about the experience. This valley was deeper than any valley I had ever been in, certainly deeper than the Grand Canyon of the Colorado in the United States. The mountains were 2,100 meters on either side of us, quite narrow, only 7.5 kilometers across at its narrowest point. We had a brilliant sun, but an absolute black sky. That's probably the hardest thing to get used to, is working in a desert-like environment with a bright sun, but a black sky, no color at all, other than, of course, the blue and white marbled earth that always stayed in the same part of the sky. All through our time there, we were there through 72 hours, the Earth doesn't move. And that's because, of course, the moon is rotating once on its axis every time it goes around the Earth in the same time frame. The other level of operation was, let's get this job going. I mean, you only have 72 hours. You're going to have about 22 hours outside the spacecraft. And as one of my colleagues said a long time ago, time is relentless. And you try to get as much done as you possibly can in a hostile environment, but also an environment where there are certain restrictions in how you use the spacesuit and how you use the equipment that's available and the like. So all through my time on the moon, I was trying to record as much as I could the images and the feelings, but at the same time, make sure that you didn't stand around and waste a lot of time oohing and aahing over where you were. And I either had an advantage or a disadvantage in that regard as a geologist, because I was there with some very specific background purposes that I was trying to accomplish, not only for myself, but for all of my colleagues who were interested in what we would discover and could see on the moon. As the last mission, we really were trying to fill in the holes that were left in our understanding, at this level of understanding, of the moon as a small planet. And so we really had a pretty focused agenda. I did, anyway, and Gene Cernan was a big help in meeting that, although he may not have fully realized all the time what that agenda was. He, as the other pilot astronauts were extremely talented observers. They realized that their mark in the history of space was going to be in part based on how well they performed as geologists and scientists, in a sense, on the moon, and they worked very hard at it. So the training was easy, and particularly once we changed it into a simulation-based training rather than just a show-and-tell kind of training, which it had been more or less before. Again, standing in this valley of Taurus Litra on the moon with this black sky and brilliant sun and high mountains was really one of the more meaningful experiences of my life. And I can only ask you to think about something comparable in your lives where you've tried to anticipate what the experience was going to be like before it occurred. But when it did occur, it was far more than you ever could have anticipated. And that's what being on the moon was for me. I think we were all quite aware of the impact that astronauts were having on the ideas and motivations of young people. One way to illustrate that is that when I applied to be a scientist astronaut, only 1,400 other Americans applied. I was surprised. I thought it would be a lot more than that. But 13 years later, 8,000 applied for a selection. It was the third selection of scientists and engineers. And a third of those, of that 8,000, were women. And no women had applied in the first 1,400. So you can see, the influence that I think Apollo had, as well as cultural changes began to have during that 13-year period.
I was just wondering, do you think if women had applied in that first one in the 1970s or late 60s, would they have gotten anywhere?
Yeah, I really think so, because the committee put together by the National Academy of Sciences made no restrictions at all on who would be considered. In fact, the chair of the selection committee, Gene Shoemaker, and I talked about this many times then, as well as since, before his untimely death here in Australia. As near as I could ever determine, there were no biases whatsoever. They actually wished that some way they could have attracted some women to apply. Women just were not applying to do those kind of things in 1964. It just wasn't happening.
Just one quick point. I think it's what you were getting at there. I'm going to call it a problem. There seems to be a problem in Australia that idols and role models are sports people and not scientists. And what we had in the late 60s, 70s, and at least a long time before then, was a whole bunch of scientists to give kids something to aspire to, whereas now it's more likely to be a cricket player, football player, baseball player.
Well, I think there, if you go back and statistically, you might find the same thing existed then. There just was another alternative. And the astronauts, particularly within the school systems, where we often spoke even before we ever flew, realized that. The enthusiasm was very, very great. But frankly, the enthusiasm is just as great today. When you go into the middle of what we call middle schools or the lower grades, young people have, as near as I can tell, and remember, over 30 years, the same level of interest as they ever had. We had, during one of our duties as astronauts, unassigned to flights, was to participate in what was called a week in the barrel, in which we were handed over to NASA headquarters public relations. And they used us to fill all of the requests they could during that week, most of which were in schools. And congressmen and others would ask NASA for an astronaut to come to the school in their district or something like that. And we worked our tails off for a week, and this week in the barrel, and usually came around about every 6 or 8 months we'd have to do another one. So we were well aware of how young people were reacting to the Apollo program during that period of time. Now, and clearly, though, there was a atmosphere, at least prior to Apollo 11, of meeting a challenge set by John Kennedy in the related to the Cold War and not to science, and that challenge made things even more exciting and interesting to everybody. And one thing you have to remember, though, that Apollo itself was a program of young people. The movie Apollo 13 might lead you to think that most of the engineers and others in Mission Control Center and elsewhere were in their late 30s and early 40s. That was just the age of the actors. The people actually doing the work during the 1960s and 70s were mostly in their 20s, just out of school. Young people who not only had were at the peak of their imagination and willingness to work together, but also had not yet learned how to fail, fortunately, and they proceeded on that assumption that they were going to be successful. That was probably one of the premier essential ingredients of the success of Apollo, was having that pool of talent and motivated talent who believed what they were doing was the most important thing they were going to do with their lives.
We could
and
go
they
on.
Really believe that.
We can spend all afternoon on this, but we don't have it, so we're going to take a break, let Harrison get some lunch. No?